Thought for the day. The justice of your action is measured by the strength of your conviction. Welcome to the Regimental Vox, a podcast dedicated to all things Warhammer and wargaming in general. I am your host and Vox operator for the evening, Caleb Meyer. It is Tuesday, September 17th, 2019. This is episode 54. As I mentioned last week, for the foreseeable future anyways, I'm going to probably be putting episodes out on Tuesday. Maybe still try to get to Mondays when I can. There's a lot going on and stuff right now that kind of makes Monday a bit difficult scheduling-wise. Namely, just because work has been so crazy and stuff lately that that first night of the week, while it's not necessarily the heaviest, it's just the adjustment after the weekend and stuff, getting back into the third shift and everything else. It just knocks it out of you a little bit. So, I've been, still dealing with actually being kind of sick and stuff, just starting a lot of sinus issues and crap, so that just makes the whole getting the wind knocked out of you by work thing even worse. So, yeah. Anywho, welcome back everybody to another wonderful week of Warhammer goodies and goodness. So, we got a few things to talk about today, primarily, the preview-y stuff, but I did want to go over some personal experiences more in depth with Warcry, actually. Got to play a couple games this past weekend, but we'll get into those specifics later on in the episode. Kind of a review of a sorts of my thoughts and feelings on the game now that I've played it, in a whole game, not just a quick little demo-y thing like I did a couple months ago. So, but let's get into the preview-y who's and what's it's first. For starters, we do have some extra preview stuff now on the Kayvan Shrike and the Iron Father Pharos for the Iron Hands and Raven Guard supplements that are being released. Or were just released? Oh, dang. My brain just is like, oh, do-ba-do-do-ba-do-do. Just went to garbage there. They have some information available for those guys. Haven't been able to get my hands on the books yet. So hopefully soon I'll be able to kind of go into more detail on those. Once those are out, obviously, they're not out yet. All of a sudden my brain was like, did they come out or are they still coming out? They are pre-orderable right now. They will be out this weekend. So, but anywho, they did have some little previews. There's been some talk back and forth on the internet as far as Iron Hands versus Raven Guard. And I kind of went over a little bit about my feelings last week on the differences, but after seeing these two characters being added, I'm once again finding myself feeling less and less impressed by the Raven Guard versus the Iron Hand. If anything, and this has been pretty common, a lot of people are feeling like the Iron Hand supplement so far is going to become like the default go-to for the Space Marines. There were a lot of people, prior to any of the supplements coming out, just based on rumors that Raven Guard were going to be the chapter to play. But personally, everything I've seen so far, I just, in comparison, that's the biggest thing. Because in a vacuum, sure, Raven Guard's got some crazy shit, and if you're up against specific builds, namely like Chaos or any other very character buff and ability heavy armies, the Raven Guard have got a lot of cool shit going on, but Other than that, there's just not much there to give you a good reason to go, yep, Ravengard's the one for me. That's definitely where I want to go. Whereas Iron Hands is almost sounding like it's going to be very, almost too much plug and play, for those of us who, you don't necessarily want to play on hard mode, but you also don't just want to press the easy button and sit back and let your army win for itself. Iron Hand sounds like it's going to be more the latter of the two there. But as far as specifics of the characters go here, the Kayvan Shrike model, we're looking at Primaris dude with a jump pack in Phobos armor here. He's got a 14-inch move, 2-up, 2-up on his weapon skill, ballistic skill, strength 4, toughness 4, 6 wounds, 6 attacks, leadership 9, and a 3+ save. Mind you, this is all just based on the preview stuff too, so obviously there could be things we're not seeing. But we'll get to that there. But not bad. The strength is, not gonna wow anybody when you consider his weapons. His weapons that he has are okay, but even those don't blow my mind. He's armed with Blackout. It's a pistol too. It's got an 18-inch range, so actually that's not that bad. If it was 12-inch, yeah, it's not good either. But at 18-inch, that's not half bad. The Vanguard models that the AdMech have with the radium carbines, they're only an 18-inch range. They fire 3 times. But a pistol 2 weapon is not terrible. It's strength 4, AP neg 2, 2 damage. And it can target character units even if they're not the closest. When resolving an attack made with the weapon, a wound roll of 6+ inflicts 1 mortal wound on the target in addition to any other damage. So, once again, Ravengard, very anti-character specifically. I don't think you're going to find yourself, blowing away fools like crazy with Blackout, as far as, going up against, like, fucking hordes and shit like that. But, once again, you find yourself close enough to a specific enemy character, and boom. Now, if you're playing against armies that don't necessarily count on their characters as much, the Raven Guard just are not. They're gonna take out your enemy's characters with all their special garbage, and then they're just gonna be Space Marines for the rest of the game, just regular old Space Marines, which isn't terrible. Mind you, but it's not gonna blow your mind either. Then he's also armed with the Raven's Talons. It's basically a lightning claws of sorts. They're strength user, so strength 4, AP neg 3, 2 damage, and when resolving an attack made with this weapon, you can reroll the wound roll. So, once again, going character hunting, you're gonna find yourself probably, chopping through most characters fairly quickly with that neg 3 AP and stuff. But, being that it's only strength 4, it's not going to be the greatest when you're going up against, it's not, he's not going to be replacing your Smash Captain anytime soon, because, he's not like, not even close to being equivalent to somebody with a Thunder Hammer. But, up against an enemy character there. In close combat, you are looking at, well, any model for that matter. But the average enemy character is probably toughness 4, toughness 5, in that ballpark. So you're going to be looking at wounding on 4s or 5s in some cases, and re-rolling the wound rolls. So that's not half bad. But for a lot of them, you're going to automatically make them take their invuln. And for many, the invuln's not that, not going to blow anybody's mind. So, and at 2 damage a piece, you're looking with 6 attacks up to 12 damage. So, for most character models, that's going to kill them rather quickly. Once again, against hordes and stuff, not very useful. I would say that if anything, his close combat weapons almost fare better against just like elite heavy infantry, going up against Terminators or things of that nature. Yeah, they're gonna be in any actually, you know what? Not Terminators necessarily, but more like Primaris Marines, going up against other Primaris. Each attack's gonna kill a dude, because of the two damage thing. So it's a pretty decent weapon in many ways. But that's the biggest thing. A lot of the Raven Guard stuff just comes across as decent to me. Not insane. He does have the ability to the Winged Deliverance ability. You can reroll charge rolls made for Raven Guard jump pack and Phobos units if they're within 6 inches of the model. He also has the diving charge for himself. After he finishes a charge move, you can select one enemy unit within an inch of it and roll a d6 on a 4 up. They suffer one mortal wound. Once again, though, yeah, the reroll charge rolls for your jump pack and Phobos units, that's not bad. But most Phobos units, you're probably not necessarily going to want to charge in. Unless most of them aren't going to be super geared towards combat. But with Shock Assault now being a thing and stuff, that may not entirely be the case. And once again, I guess what's kind of holding me back here is that in many ways Raven Guard seem to favor non-Primaris builds in a lot of ways. And it's just kind of weird, that this guy, he gets the Primaris treatment, but he's gone the route of being a close combat jump trooper. Whereas the White Scars, which are all about close combat, their dude man doesn't get his bike. Corsaro Khan there, they took away his bike to make him Primaris. So I don't know, weird choices there. Not bad choices in the case of Raven Guard, but just weird choices that their dude gets the ability to still be super fast and still has a jump pack and everything, but the White Scars dude, who used to be super famous for riding his bike, doesn't get it anymore. So it is what it is, I guess. That being said, in comparison, Iron Father Pharos is looking pretty fucking badass. Wilford Brimley of the future is just a badass. We're looking, he's a little bit slower. 5-inch move with a weapon skill of 3+, but ballistic skill 2 up, strength 4, toughness 5, 7 wounds, 5 attacks, leadership 9, with a save of 2 up. He also has a pair of servo arms and his bolt pistol sidearm, but he has two relics that he's armed with. His axe, which is Harrow Hand, which makes him hit at strength 7 with an AP of -2 and 2 damage. So in many cases, he's going to be, wounding on threes for in most cases that he would be useful against most targets you might put him up against and stuff. With AP -2, but he can also, wound most tanks even on 4 up. So there's only going to be a few things that he might go toe to toe with at any point that would be 5 up. So yeah, he's just got a little bit more oomph. Yeah, he's got one less attack than Kayvan Strike. His AP is not as high. He doesn't get the rerolls. These are all true. Definitely not saying that, he's necessarily the better melee character, but he's got some stuff going for him. But he also has the Gorgon's Wrath heavy bolter mounted to his shoulder, which is a 36-inch range heavy 3 with strength 5, AP -2, 2 damage. So, he can definitely he's definitely no slouch when it comes to ranged combat. The biggest things though are his buffs. The Rites of Tempering gives friendly Iron Hands units 5 up invuln while they have guys within 6 inches of this model, and, which is obviously being able to pass off a 5 up invuln is very nice. If there's anybody who plays orcs with the Index KFF would know. There's also the Signum Array. At the start of your shooting phase, you can select one friendly Iron Hands unit that is within 3 inches of this model. Models in the selected unit have a ballistic skill characteristic of 2 up until the end of that phase. So that's really nice that they have that option. it is a little, you know, I'm not certain why they chose the two up until the end of that phase instead of it being a plus one modifier. It's just a little bit different from what most wordings and most rules typically do. But that does change the way that things work because of the way modifiers can go, you know, when they come into play versus the actual natural ballistic skills and stuff. It's an interesting change of wording in many ways. Mechanically, it doesn't change it versus plus one hit modifier. But it does at the same time, like I said, it's just because of the order of operations, basically, with the way the roles work and stuff. So then he also has Master the Forge. He can repair vehicles, and when he uses his Blessing of the Omnissiah ability, that vehicle model regains up to 3 lost wounds instead of up to D3. So he's kind of a cross between like a tech marine and, you know, like a captain sort of situation. So, overall, from what I've been hearing from some of the stuff where people have managed to have early previews and stuff of the the supplement, excuse me, I couldn't think of the damn word, that they have said that this guy combined with a bunch of the other Iron Hands shit, they're just gonna be really fucking tough as nails. And personally, in this, you know, in this game, overall, with the way it's currently in the current meta and everything, I feel like somebody who can just not only dish out a beating, but can absolutely soak up mountains of damage. That army tends to fare better than when you look at like what the Raven Guard specifically do with the whole, you know, we're going to wipe out their characters. Okay, yeah. Once again, in certain builds, that's going to be really gross. Like, it's going to completely demoralize and demolish Chaos specifically, once again, comes to mind. But in general, I'm just not sold on that versus the Iron Hands. So now, there have been some leaks regarding Salamanders. I haven't seen the full details. And once again, until I see something official, I don't want to necessarily speak out of turn, because it could turn out that, oh no, that's actually false. That's, you know, completely made up shit. But what little I've heard so far doesn't look so great for the Salamanders. And what was interesting from what I heard too is that while so far we've had, the main characters from each of these armies so far cross the Rubicon Primaris. Well, with the exception of being the Iron Hands, they didn't really have a character before, and now they do, and he's Primaris. Vulcan Histon from the Salamanders does not seem to be getting the Primaris treatment from what we've heard so far, which is kind of weird. Once again, reserve judgment and everything until we see something with some modicum of finality. But moving along here, though, with the pre-orders as well, we do have the Primaris Lieutenant in Phobos armor being released, which is cool. And then there will also be the multi-part kit Eliminators being released. Now, this kit has been a bit of a point of contention as of late for many people, namely because of the price. I believe in the US it's going to end up being $50. Yeah, $50 for the multi-part kit. I definitely would say overall, if you're looking for some Space Marines, if you can get those Eliminators from Shadow Spear, or just get a Shadow Spear set on the cheap, do so now before they become rarer than they already are and more expensive. The prices have probably already gone up secondhand market wise, because yeah, it's just, that's pretty expensive. I typically see most of the Primaris half The Shadow Spear sets go for, you know, 80 to $100, depending, give or take. So for this one 3-model kit for $50 is very, very brutal and rough. Now it is a nice kit, and when it says multi-part, I mean there is a shit ton of bonus options overall. Between the fact that you have two different weapons options, for starters, for the Eliminators. They are also available with multiple poses for arms. So some of them you can have one where he's got like the rifle slung, and then he's got his pistol in his hand instead, aimed outwards and whatnot. So there's a lot of options there. And then obviously there's the laser fusils and stuff too versus the I think it's. Damn, I can't even remember. The bolt sniper rifle, I think, is all it's called. Yeah, they also have, I think, like 10 heads included in the kit, too, for only 3 models. So there's a lot of ways that you can take these 3 models and make a large amount of variants, so that they look different from the rest of your Eliminators. But still, $50 for three. All these models, it's rough. I mean, when we think about in terms of like a character model, some character models are in the $30 to $40 range, and that's for like a generic character, not like a named unique character where you're only going to need the one ever, because you can't have more than one of them. But even like just having I think Tech Priest Engine Sears are like $30, $35. If you want 3 of them in your AdMech army, you're looking at 90 to, 90, 100 or more dollars for 3 models. So, yeah, but characters, generally speaking, you're only going to have the one and be done with it. These Eliminators, you're probably going to have multiple squads and stuff. I don't remember right off the top of my head if the squad side goes above 3. Yeah, especially if you can put them in larger squads and stuff, that's a lot of fucking money for just a very tiny handful of models. So, something to be aware of though, if you decide to get into it. They're really badass models, but damn, they are not cheap. Moving along here, we also did get a new Battle Sister bulletin that showed off some of the new vehicle stuff. They had the Rhino painted up with a bunch of the extra little accoutrement all over it. So definitely looking very sisters like. But at the same time, it's just a Rhino. I don't see anything to it that made me go, oh wow, this is a whole new ball game. It's just all the flourish and stuff like that. So whether it's going to be the standard Rhino kit that just comes with an upgrade set in there, or if it's actually a, modified sprue set, don't know yet. But it definitely looks nice. Like I said, don't get me wrong, it looks very nice. So all the Sisters of Battle stuff should be out here within the next couple of months, since the book is due out in November. So lastly on our preview set here, Psychic Awakening, this week's announcement and stuff is that A, there is a plastic Incubi set coming out now. And then B, they will be bringing back the Demiclave. So, if you are familiar with previous editions of the Drukhari back when they were just called Dark Eldar, you could have these guys armed with a Demiclave, which was basically two claves that could be like hooked together to act as like a big giant, like the butterfly staff sort of thing. Or you could split it into 2 separate smaller blades. That was no longer available after the release of the Drukhari Codex. It's just everybody in your incubi just was armed with a the clave. That was it. Nothing more to it. They've changed that. Like I said, it is now going to be armed with the demiclave. So that's kind of cool. It's nice to see Eldari of any sort getting a little bit of plastic love. Because, damn, some of those models are absolutely fucking ancient. And now, as far as the differences go between the clave and then the demiclave, the clave is a melee weapon with strength plus one, AP neg three with one damage. The demiclave can be used as a single blade, which is strength plus one, neg three AP, one damage, or as dual blades. Instead, you can use it at strength user, AP neg two, and one damage, and you get to fight with two additional attacks with that weapon. So if you don't need to hit as hard, you can go into dual blade mode. Better for dealing with cheaper infantry and stuff versus the single blade mode. So yeah, overall, cool stuff there. I'm curious to see more about Psychic Awakening. I'd really like to see an actual time frame on when the hell is this shit coming out, but they're gonna drag the shit out of this, I can tell you that much. So my two biggest things that I'm looking forward to seeing more of is Psychic Awakening, but also, honestly, those Ossiarch Bone Reapers for Age of Sigmar. So, but that's all we have this week for the preview stuff. I'm going to take a quick break here. After the break, I'm going to go into my experiences with Warcry over the weekend, as well as a little bit on the Warcry FAQ, so stay tuned.
You're listening to the Regimental Vox. Follow the Regimental Vox on social media by going to facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast or on Twitter @RegimentalVox. Like what you're hearing? You can help support the show for as little as $1 a month by going to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox today.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Regimental Vox. As I mentioned before the break, wanted to go over personal experiences with Warcry as well as the Warcry FAQ. This past weekend, I managed to play two games of Warcry, one of them as part of the league that I joined. The other one was just a in-house game here with Krista. Admittedly, I kind of wish I'd played them in reverse order. I did the league game Friday night, did the game with her on Saturday. As a side note, we were going to go to an AOS tournament on Saturday, but neither of us have been feeling very well as of late, as I've mentioned before. Saturday morning, just with being sick and taking all this medication and stuff, my body is just like, no, you're dead to the world. So it was not fun. But so we ended up missing out on the tournament. Well, we wanted to make the best of it, so we played a game at home with Warcry. My game Friday night for the league was my first full game, first game at all with the Corvus Cabal. And it didn't go well at all. I went up against Bone Splitters, and I did manage to kill a very large portion of my opponent's warband, but my warband was completely wiped out, just smoked. So it was not good. It was bad. Had fun with it though. I definitely would say that Saturday when I played against Krista with her Night Haunt, which was her first game, period. She hadn't played demo and everything else, just first game, done. When I played against her, did a lot better. And mind you, admittedly, and this is not to knock her in any capacity, she just has far less, wargaming experience as a whole than my opponent that I played Friday night. At the same time too, the missions that we played were very different and stuff. That definitely made a huge difference. The terrain made a huge difference, etc. Friday night, for my league thing, I played the Burn and Pillage mission, which turns out is part of the FAQ, actually. And it is completely different from the way we ended up playing. Well, completely different is a little bit of a stretch, but it's very different anyways from the way we ended up handling it Friday night. The actual wording on the card little backstory on how the mission works. Basically, there are six objectives put down on the field. One player puts down three, the other player puts down three. And you have to, if you're holding an objective, you can burn it. Basically claim it, take it off the board, and it's yours. First player to burn four of the objectives wins the mission. Okay, so, which is, sounds okay, like, all right, yeah, that makes sense. The problem is the way it's worded on the card is not super clear on how many objectives you can burn each turn. We ended up, my opponent and I, actually, Krista was with us, and since she actually has, like, an English degree, she's got... more than just the English degree, but she does have a bachelor's in English. I don't remember. I'll have to ask her specifically. She's got like a master's in social work and stuff there too. So she's pretty smart. We were like, let's ask the person who knows the English language better than we do. How the hell do you interpret the instructions here? Because the way it's written was kind of ambiguous at first. And it was like, okay, well, if you're sitting on four objectives, do you just get to burn all four of them and the game just ends? Or what's the deal? We agreed based on, the way it was worded and her agreement too, that we limited it to burning one objective per turn. Done deal. Okay. That sounds good. But admittedly, it was a good thing though that we did it that way to some degree, because part of the thing was with the way the deployment worked and stuff. My deployment was two. So if you're looking at the board and you've got, you got your long edge and then you got your short edge, obviously. I had to deploy two parts of my warband on opposing corners of one of the long edges. And then the third part came in, basically they formed like a triangle. The third part was on the other side of the board, right at the midway point on the edge of the battlefield. Sounds good. My opponent was able to, his deployment was in the middle of the board. He had all three parts basically once again in a triangular formation, like 6 inches from the center of the board, roughly, was the way that was kind of set up. The thing is that when you place the objectives, you can't place the objectives any closer than 4 inches from the edge of the battlefield. Basically he was able to park his three objectives right directly under where his warbands were already, where his warband was already at and deployed. I could deploy it close to my guys, but not directly under them. Now, we weren't 100% certain, because, once again, new game and stuff, we did get some of the rules a little wrong. It turns out, like, the way we were doing the who holds the objective was within an inch of the objective, because we had just accidentally skipped over that part with the specifics. It's within 3 inches. Still the way that it's worded was very hard to tell. Because it just says, all right, if you control the objective, boom, done. Okay, well, all right, I guess we'll have to go by whoever's got the most in the area and so on and so forth. Like I said, they did end up FAQing it, so the new, let me pull up the actual specifics on what they changed it to. So once again, just to clarify, the way we ran the mission was It was a little ambiguous, but we went with you can only burn one objective per turn. And, you know, that, and boom, there you go. So the game started with him burning an objective, and then I burned one, like, right after that, and we went from there. They changed it to, starting with the player who won the priority role, place alternate objectives anywhere more than 4 inches from the edge in any other objective, etc., etc. Okay, so, yep, there's that. Starting from the second battle round, that was something they added in. At the end of each battle round, players can burn any objective they control, which when it says they can burn any objective they control, is still slightly ambiguous. Does that mean if I control four objectives at the end of one of my turns, I can just boom, 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 just burn them all and the game ends immediately? I'm going to say yes, that in this case, because the previous wording was you can burn an objective. This says any objective that you control, suggesting that, if anything, this is more ambiguous, though, than when it says an objective. That, to me, sounds like, all right, once per battle round, you get to burn a singular objective. The way this is worded says any objective, you know, per battle round. Okay, that could mean still a singular one, or it could equally mean all the objectives you control. So, whatever. But they changed it so it has to be at the start of the, at the end of the second battle round. So you can't just burn a bunch of objectives right off the bat when the, you know, game begins. Which makes a little bit more sense, too, with the whole, it lends some credence to being able to burn more than one objective per turn. It definitely does. Because, you know, if it was multiple objectives, but you could do it right off the bat when the game begins and your deployment just happens to drop you right on top of one of these objectives, then you're just immediately almost done with the game before any dice have even been rolled, or any characters or anything moved. The game's almost already over. So that kind of sucks. It's not very interesting in that, in those regards. But they also added that players can burn any objective they control if there are no enemy models within 3 inches of the objective. So it's not just a matter of who controls the objective. You know, because right now I think with the way that it's worded and stuff in the rules is that you control an objective if you have more models within 3 inches. In this case specifically, there must be no enemy models within 3 inches of the objective. So that is definitely more interesting. The battle then ends after 4 rounds. When the battle ends, the player who burned the most objectives is the winner. So it's no longer he who burns 4 objectives first wins. It's just whoever burns the most over those 4 battle rounds wins. Which, you know, does mean, you know, like, overall, if you've burned 4 objectives, the game is technically over. You could keep playing it out, but there's no point. Once somebody's burned 4 out of 6, they've burned the majority of them, and that's it. So, yeah. Just something, like I said, it's just pretty interesting how that we just happened to play the one, or one of the few missions that got all sorts of discombobulated and turned around and shit right after we had just done it. So, but yeah, it was still fun. I did manage to do a decent amount of damage here and there. So, but I definitely learned a lot from just that playing that one game. And then Saturday when I played with Krista, I think the mission was Domination was the name of the mission. Basically, you have to kill all of the opposing warband's models that are in their shield. Because your warband split into the shield, dagger, and hammer, basically. And you had to kill all the models in the enemy's shield. So, once you did that, game was over. I think she managed to kill one guy in my shield and maybe one or two other models. She didn't manage to kill a whole lot of guys, admittedly. And then for me, while I did kill a couple things outside of the shield, I really definitely focused down on trying to get at her shield characters. And I will say, after having played that time going, okay, I learned how my warband works a little bit better last night. Let's try some new shit. I majorly took advantage of the Shrike Talon in the Corvus Cabal. So the Corvus Cabal has two abilities. One of them costs, one of them is a quad, which means it uses four like dice. And then the other one's a triple. That they both do the same thing. The catch is the triple can only be used by the Shrike Talon character. The quad can be used by any model in your warband. Assuming that you're Corvus Cabal. This is just Corvus Cabal specific stuff. But anywho. So you take that Shrike Talon. He's got an 8-inch move to start, okay? You have him, and the way his ability works, and I think it's called Swooping Attack or Swooping Dive or something like that. You spend that triple, he gets to make a bonus move action, and then if he happens to end up having moved vertically downwards 3 inches or more, then he also gets to make a bonus attack action. I used this ability twice during the game. Once, like right after the Shrike Talon had arrived, since with the missions deployment, it was part of the dagger, and the dagger came in on the second round instead of being deployed at the beginning of the game. I had a target within range, so I immediately was like, okay, boom. Used that ability. I did a free move action, got into range with this opponent, used my free attack action, and went to town. I don't remember. I think it might have taken two attack actions. I don't remember. But I still ended up with having one action left over because I moved for free with that ability. I attacked for free with that ability. And then I believe I attacked again. So, moved him around, whatever. The game actually ended by doing something fairly similar trick-wise. I had to move him once. I had to move him up onto a platform and then use that ability at the end of the game to swoop down with the free bonus movement. And then I got my bonus attack, and then I had another attack, my second action, still available. Definitely, I will say that when I add on to the warband, I am going to be shooting hardcore to add another Shrike Talon to the force. Mind you, obviously, you only have so many dice per turn that you can spend towards these abilities and stuff, and that specifically is going to also require you to have a triple, which is... It happens more than you would think it would. The nice thing is that the value of it doesn't really matter for some of these abilities. So whether you got triple six or triple one, it's triple either way. Some abilities do point out that it's based on the value of the dice, in which case, at least so far from what I've seen, you want to try and get like a high number for your triple. So like a triple six or something like that. I know one of my abilities for the Corvus Cabal, Raven Dart, is a double ability, so it requires you to have two matching dice. You target an enemy within 8 inches, and then you roll a d6. On a 3 to 5, it does 1 damage to them, and on a 6, it does whatever the initial value of those dice were. So if you had a pair of sixes that you spent towards it, boom. You're doing 6 fucking damage instead. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on with the game. Overall, my personal experience, and Krista and I talked about it afterwards too, is that it is, not only is it really fun, but it is very simple to pick up and learn and play. It has its complexities. It definitely has complexities in there too. Namely with, like I was just talking about, the whole weighing your options with your abilities. At the beginning of each battle round, you roll 6 die, and you get a wild die too. You get like a spare extra die. But you roll the 6 dice, and then, you know, this is a combination of determining your initiative, who's activating first, as well as how many abilities do I get to spend this turn. So if somebody rolls 6 dice and they get all unique dice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they have basically, you know, unless their opponent happens to roll 6 unique dice as well, they're going to get initiative. They're going to get to go first. However, they have no doubles, triples, quads, nothing. So they won't get to use any abilities during that turn. However, before you finish that roll-off stage to determine initiative, you have that wild die. Now, you can do either. You can put the wild die into your pool for later. You only get one wild die per turn, but if you didn't spend it earlier in the game, towards, you know, this particular phase, you get to keep it. Now, it doesn't carry over from from round to round if you've spent it already. So, for example, let's say you've got a pair of sixes, decide you want a triple. So you spend your wild die to turn that pair of sixes into 3 sixes. Cool. If by the end of that round you didn't end up actually spending that triple on anything, that's too bad. Those dice are gone, you know, including the wild die. However, if, you know, before the hero phase was over and initiative was determined, you go, you know what, I'm going to store this wild die for later, you could totally do that too. So you can also, I believe you can use a wild die as well to add another single if you wanted to. You know, let's say you've got 4 different singles, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you got 2 5s. You could go, all right, well, I'm going to, right now I have 4 singles. I'm going to add a 5th. So I have 5 singles, and then I've got 2 5s. Or you could go ahead and go, you know what? I want to turn that 5 into a triple. I got my 4 singles and triple 5. Or I want to have more abilities, so I'm going to actually lower my potential initiative here. I'm going to turn my 4, my singular 4, into a double. So then I have 1, 2, 3, and then I got 2 4s and 2 5s. You know, so there's a lot of flexibility there, determining what you want to do. The player who ends up having the most singles gets to go first, like I said. So, but yeah, so there's a lot of that sort of stuff. Also, with the abilities themselves, it's just knowing when to time it to maximize its functionality. You know, that swooping attack that I mentioned there. If I chose to use it, I can choose to just use it just to get a bonus move if I wanted to. But that's not the best way to use it. Because if you do the bonus move but don't end up in range to attack somebody, that bonus attack action you get, it's a wash. Because any bonus actions you get from abilities have to be used right then and there. Otherwise, they're gone. You don't get to store, you don't get to like do free bonus move and then spend an action to move and then still get your free attack. Nope. You have to directly get your free bonus move if you are end up, you know, 3 inches or less, or 3 inches or more, excuse me, dropping down. Then you get to, you know, get a bonus attack action if you're in range of a target. So, but yeah, even if I don't have those extra abilities, the Shrike Talon being able to move the 8 inches, just like in 40K and just like in AOS, movement is a big, big, big part of this game. If anything, in a lot of ways, it's bigger because of the way that the terrain is such a key feature to the game compared to like AOS or 40K. So, the ability to really outpace your opponent and maneuver around them is definitely a huge boon. Using terrain to your advantage is highly, highly recommended. So, overall, my personal, you know, at the end of the day, if you're sitting here on the fence, should I or shouldn't I with Warcry, I think you should. Like, I think it is a very, very fun game that has a lot of potential. The way they have all the campaign stuff set up is really cool. And even just for one-off games, you know, if you just want to sit down, play a game quick and be done with it, but you want something that's got, you know, a little bit of complexity without being overtly so, with beautiful models too. I mean, you can obviously, there's several AOS factions that have data cards available so that you can play them, you know, like Nighthaunt, Stormcast, Gloomspite, etc., so that you can play them in Warcry. But I honestly feel like the warbands themselves that they made, even the ones I don't really care for aesthetically, are some of the most impressive models they put out. Now, I will say the Corvus Cabal, at least, that I built, very, very stupidly finicky to build with. But man, the result is just gorgeous. I cannot complain about the results I got in the long run. They are beautiful, beautiful models. So, but yeah, like I said, I do highly recommend you check out Warcry. Even if you're a big 40K guy, not big into AOS or anything, it's not your, you know, it's not your typical thing. Warcry is really cool. If anything, I kind of wish that they had done a little bit more with Kill Team, in a similarity to the way Warcry has been handled. So, Kill Team, in many ways, it does have lots of unique rules, and I'm definitely not knocking it in any capacity, but the data sheets are just almost too similar to 40K. They're very, very, very similar to 40K, it just doesn't feel like, it feels like 40K just on a smaller scale, in many ways, with a few additional core mechanics. Warcry in many ways feels like a completely unique experience. It does not feel like skirmish level AOS or anything like that. It feels very, very unique and different in many regards. So, my hope is that I'll be able to report back with some more experiences with Warcry in the near future, between this league and, you know, Krista and I playing at home and stuff. So, but we'll see, you know, time will tell. I definitely want to get some paint on them very, very soon for sure. Because once again, they're just gorgeous models. They deserve to be painted. So, but yeah, like I said, I think at the end of the day, definitely check out Warcry. Find a warband that suits you if you already have AOS models. See if they've got data cards available. Or if none of the warbands currently available suit you and, you know, you don't currently have AOS stuff, figure out if any of those, you know, AOS armies work for you and go from there. Although I will say that cost-wise, it's probably cheaper to just pick up one of the Warcry warbands rather than trying to get into Warcry through an AOS army if you have no interest in playing that AOS army otherwise. But if you do, it's a good choice. So, but yeah, beyond that, you know, I'm hoping that soon I'll be able to maybe check out that Monsters and Mercs thing a little bit. Let you guys know the details on that. I would also, on a side note, like to, you know, Kristen and I actually were at the hobby shop the other day and looked at Aeronautica Imperialis. We both agreed it looked pretty cool. So hopefully at some point we'll be able to take a look at that game as well and let you guys know about that. So, but I think I'm going to call it a call at that for this week. Thank you guys for listening. As always, you can follow me on the Facebook page, facebook.com/theRegimentalVoxPodcast. Follow me on Twitter, @RegimentalVox. And also, you can help me out. Go to patreon.com/theRegimentalVox. You can donate. Every little bit of money helps. Once again, I'd love to get some new equipment. In fact, just a couple minutes ago, my cat managed to... He was up on the desk getting in the way. I tried to get him down. And in the process, the whole... My microphone, I think I mentioned a long time ago, is super janky. It doesn't even have all the screws to like hold it into place on the desk mounting. Well, not mounting. It's just like a weight to hold it to the desk. It's like falling apart and crap. Well, just the act of trying to get him up off the desk, the fucking thing fell over, you know, Nobody even touched it. It just fell over because of too much movement nearby. It doesn't even like a stiff breeze. So, but yeah, once again, you can hit up the Patreon. Help me out. Help me get some gear so I can do some, you know, better sound quality. Also, too, I'd like to, you know, be able to get some more better software so I can do Skype interview stuff and things of that nature. So still working on it, but, you know, this stuff costs money. Donations would definitely help to speed up that process. So, but thank you guys for listening. I will catch you all next week. This is Caleb Meyer signing out for the evening. Have a wonderful week, everyone.